This week's show with the cross-stitch geek, Joanna Augusto, is sponsored by Avlia Folk Embroidery. Designer Krista West, in addition to her ongoing parade of excellent folk designs, recently introduced Folk Flourishes, a new way to add embroidery to your clothing without using waste canvas. The woodlands and garden kits are available now. She also has upgraded her Avlia work bags to full kits with printed designs on the bags, threads, thread drops, a needle binder, and needles. The kits are available in two designs, and there are two sizes of bags for each design. If you want to learn more, listen to the podcast we did with Krista on March 17 and watch the Stitch Hour we did with Krista March 20. Krista has also created a couple of videos on her YouTube channel to help you with your Folk Flourishes projects. These new kits and much more are all available at avliaembroidery.com. Thanks to Avlia Folk Embroidery for sponsoring the show, and now our conversation with Joanna Augusto. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. This week, our artist, the cross-stitch geek, Joanna Augusto. Joanna, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You've got so much going on here. Yeah. Now, we just learned before we started recording here that you're from Portugal, but living in Canada. I want to go to Portugal. Yep. Oh, man, I want to go.
It's such a nice place. Like, the weather is very nice, like the culture, the food, and it's just the landscape is incredible. I do, like, if people want to travel to Portugal, they should. Yeah.
No, well, like I was telling you, I follow a lot of cyclists who train and ride, and some live in Portugal, and I never really appreciated it till I saw those videos, and oh boy, it's a beautiful country. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It is.
So you moved to Canada to study?
Yep. I moved here in 2009 to start my PhD in biology.
Oh, okay. So what area? Ooh, my bachelor, my lame little bachelor is in biology. So now I'm curious.
Oh, so I was working with pilot whales out on the east coast of Canada. Very, very cool. And I was studying social structure. So how they spend time together, how they associate, and how that changes with time. We had like this working hypothesis that males and females stayed in the same group that they were born in throughout their whole lives, kind of like the resident orcas of Washington and Vancouver. But we found out after a good number of years that it was a little bit more complicated than that. They do spend a lot of time together. They stay in little groups that can spend like 15 or 20 years together, but they're not related to each other. There's males and there's females, but it seems to be more friendship than connection in terms of how related they are with each other.
Fascinating.
That was very, very cool. It was a really, really interesting study. Like the area that I was working in, Cape Breton, it's just beautiful. One of the most gorgeous places that I've been.
So how do you study? All right, we'll get to the needlework in a little bit because marine biology fascinates the heck out of me. So how did you study? I mean, are they tagged and you track them or what do you do?
So the population I was working with, they spent their most of the year offshore, and then they move into the Gulf of St. Lawrence that's within like Cape Breton and all of that area in the summer. So I got to spend 4 summers out in Cape Breton working with a whale watching company. And the whole thing was that we got to go for free with them during those 2 months on all of their trips. They got to advertise to the public that they had researchers with them. So got to interact with the public, talk to people, get them to ask questions. It was really, really cool. Wow. But the population itself wasn't tagged. So we were basically finding groups of whales, and then we were spending anywhere from 5 to 15, 20 minutes with them. And me and my field assistant, one person had the camera and was taking photos of the whales, of the dorsal fin. So that's the fin on their back. Yeah. They get little nicks and little scars and little bits taken out of them just by living, basically. And they don't grow back. So when they have those little nicks and those little notches out of their dorsal fin, it kind of works as a fingerprinting system. So if you have a good photo of a whale, you can track it throughout time. So we had someone taking photos of all the whales in the groups. And then we had someone else with a clipboard making notes of how big the group was, if there were babies in the group, what they were doing, if there was anything unusual happening in the vicinity, like all sorts of information like that. So we could track with our photos year to year who was coming back, basically, and who they were spending time with when they were out there.
Wow.
And wow. I did 4 years of data collection, but the study actually started in the 90s in 1998. So I had, I think by the time I finished, about 16 years of data to look at, to see like who was spending time with whom and how that changed.
Holy smokes. What a blast. Wow.
It was adventure of a lifetime, honestly. Just getting to spend 2 months out of the year, pretty much like 8 to 10 hours on the water working with the whales. It was pretty awesome. It was an experience for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a lot of boat hours. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I don't get seasick anymore. So that's a plus.
Yeah. Oh, man. So cool. So now that's a PhD. Instead of spending hours in a library studying old books and stuff. Oh, man, how cool. Yep.
Then I got to spend hours and hours looking at photos and figuring out who was who and looking at the babies and trying to figure out who the babies were, because part of what I was looking at was babysitting and if it was happening in the population. So I had to, like, identify babies, identify caregivers, see how that was changing, and a lot of math to figure out, like, how the individuals were spending time together and how that was changing with time. But so much fun.
Oh, boy, you win. Way to go. Way to go. So then what do you do with that now? Your full-time job related, or did you go off in a different direction?
I went off in a different direction. I think about 2 or 3 years into my PhD, I realized that the two things that I really, really enjoyed about biology, one of it was data collection, going out on the water and all of that. But the other big chunk of it was actually talking to people about science and talking to them about like what I was doing, what other cool science stuff there was out there. And I realized that that's kind of the niche that I want to be in. It's like science communication. So after I finished my PhD, I worked in a science center for multiple years in Halifax. And I worked behind the scenes, like creating hands-on activities and working with all sorts of stuff to make sure that kids could understand science in different ways. And I got to inject tiny little bits of my research here and there. And then my partner and I moved to Vancouver in 2020, and I had to leave my science center job because different location. And I ended up working with a not-for-profit that I volunteered with during my graduate studies that does the same thing, but on a national scale all across Canada. They get volunteers into classrooms doing hands-on science with kids of all ages. They do a bunch of other activities and online that make science accessible. And what I'm doing right now is doing training and professional development for those volunteers. I'm supporting and creating like the training that they need to actually go into the classrooms and explain science. And then on the other hand, I create programs that let them understand what kind of skills they're earning. It's like communication and teaching and problem solving, all of that stuff, and how they can actually put that in play when they finish their studies and are looking for a job. How do they explain that in a resume or in an interview? So my job is a little bit different, but I get to use a lot of the skills that I've earned while doing my PhD.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating. Good for you. That's neat. Yeah. Of course, I'm a former teacher, so I relate to all of that. So fantastic. Yeah. So where does the, well, and then you're, and then on top of it, you run all the time.
It has become one of my main hobbies. That was completely unexpected. I started running while I was doing field work. One of my field assistants wanted to go back to running after a back issue, and she was feeling better. And she was like, oh, I want to do a couch to 5K, but I don't want to do it alone. Can you do it with me? And I was like, okay, sure. You're also pretty much starting from scratch. I've never really run in my life. And then it just became something that I really enjoyed doing. And while I was doing my PhD, I'd run like once or twice a week. I'd do like the odd 5K event here and there. And then when I went from like a PhD and from a PhD with like working like 50, 60 hours per week to a regular job, just like 40 hours, it's like, oh, I have time on my hands. Maybe I should actually invest some of this time to like run a little bit more. And that went from like running 5Ks to running 10Ks, doing a 15, and then being like, oh, if I've done a 15K, I can do a half marathon. And at one point, like in 2022, I ran 3 half marathons in 1 year. Wow. And I was like, maybe it's time to try for a full marathon. That was my big thing last year. And I did the whole training, but unfortunately I got sick right before the race. So that didn't happen, but very angry for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, honestly. But now I'm getting back to it. I have a half marathon in June that I'm training for, and hopefully I'll do another one at the end of fall, and next year we'll try again for a full marathon.
Go for it. Yep. Yeah. Get sick right before a marathon after all that work. I'd have been mad for more than 2 weeks.
I don't know. I was so sick and so mad and so upset at everything. And I traveled to go to the marathon too, because I'm in Vancouver currently, and I got sick on the trip to Halifax on the other coast because I decided that I wanted to do my first marathon in the place where I did my first 5K and my favorite race, the Blue Nose, and got sick on the trip to do the race. It was just not good.
and getting sick traveling is the worst. Oh, jeez.
yeah. Being sick traveling, staying with a friend, just worrying about getting her and the kids sick. So
yeah.
Well, yep.
Yuck. Well, next year you get it. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. Next year.
So how does the needlework fit into all this?
So needlework, I do it a lot, honestly, when I am recovering from running.
Oh.
So there is a lot of like, for me, so I run and then the next day, of course, I'm sore. So there is a lot of like sitting on the couch with my podcast and either designing or stitching. And it's a very relaxing activity for me. So it's like it centers me, and it definitely helps with keeping stress at bay too. Yeah.
Who taught you?
So I learned from a friend of the family when I was 6 or 7 years old, give or take. Yeah. So my grandma taught me the basics of how to crochet, but she didn't know how to do needlework. And I was very interested in that. So we had like downstairs neighbor who was very much into needlework. And she taught me how to do cross stitch. And I remember the first piece that I did was a baby Smurf that I just saw the pattern. And I was like, I need to do this. And my neighbor was like, that seems a little bit advanced, but sure, it's a printed canvas. We can figure this out. I can teach you how to do this. And it took me like months to do my first piece, but it worked. Like, and I got the bug. I've been cross-stitching for over 30 years now with little breaks here and there, like for like during my undergrad. I didn't stitch that much. But then, like, I did a little bit during my PhD while I was here, and then it really got back into it after I graduated. And again, I had a little bit more time on my hands.
Yeah. You're not the first one who, we've done several shows where we talked about the mental aspect of needlework and how it calms you. And yeah, there's a lot of benefit there.
Yeah, it feels very meditative when you're like just doing something with your hands that you're very comfortable with. It like lets your mind in a way focus, but in, on another way wander and just have like space. It's a really interesting, it sometimes it is zoning out and sometimes it's just you focus on something and if you're working on a problem or anything like that, like the solution happens. It's very interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of study to be done on the mental aspect of needlework. No question about it.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So that just cross stitch, not just cross stitch, but is that pretty much what you do these days is cross stitch?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I know the very basics of crocheting, so I tried doing amigurumi, but it's too complicated for me at the stage where I am, so I can do like granny squares and things like that. And I've tried knitting with a loom, with a circular loom. And I like it, but I don't pick it up as much as I pick up cross stitching.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I don't do either one of those, crochet or knit. No thanks. Nope. Tried the knitting once, but yeah, just didn't sync up with me, so.
Yeah, I can't do it with the needles. It's just there's something that doesn't click with me, but with the loom, with the circular loom, it works better, but it's not something that I gravitate towards all the time.
Yeah, it fascinates me that knitters, you know, who will sit in the middle of a conversation, needles just flying, and they're carrying on a conversation, their hands, it's like a church organist who's got five different things going at once and not missing a trick. Yeah, it's amazing.
And just continue with conversation smoothly. I have a couple of friends that do that, and it's like fascinating.
Yeah, how
Yeah.
do you
On the
not make
other
a
hand, like,
mess?
I know. On the other hand, I do that with online meetings where I don't have to type anything. I'm like, I have my headphones on and I'm like listening in and if I'm talking to people and I am cross-stitching if it is something that I don't have to count, if it have just like a space to fill out. So, you know,
There
it
you
also
go.
works.
There you go. Yeah. Makes the meetings tolerable. Yeah.
It helps me focus if I have something to do with my hands. So, yeah, it helps a bit.
Just don't let the camera tilt down. That's all.
Oh, it's fine. Like I have several people that do things like that on our meetings. Our supervisors are very cool with it. We have people that like draw and paint
Oh.
during meetings. So our supervisors are very much like just as long as you're paying attention and contributing, that's completely fine, whatever you're doing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I've worked for some people that would not be that would not be an option. Nope.
Agreed. I've worked with people that wouldn't fly either, but this group is, it's really, really good. They really understand stuff like this.
That's great. So where does the design thing come in? What
So
when did you start doing that?
so that's a story. I moved from Halifax to Vancouver in 2020, the week the pandemic started. Because my part that was the most awful timing ever, but my partner got a postdoc after he finished his PhD. So it had been in the works for 3 or 4 months at that point. He had his contract signed, so we had to move. And pandemic started, and I couldn't find a job. And I had to find a way to keep sane. So beyond just stitching, I had a couple of projects that I finished. Then I was like, you know what? I can try my hand at this. I like photos. I like math. I feel like there's a connection here. I can probably design things. So got myself a designing software and I started with small patterns and then increased to medium patterns and then kept going. Then I started off with like the molecule series. I was like, caffeine. I know what the caffeine molecule looks like. This is not that complicated. I can make a small pattern and then stitch it. And it worked. And it was enough to gain enough confidence to try my hand at like a couple of different things.
Yeah, that's the thing that hooked me on your work was the first time I saw molecules in needlework. That was a first for me. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not that complicated once you start to understand like how to connect them and all of that. And like I color coded the different atoms and everything. I was like, okay, no, this works. I can do a couple of these. And then I realized I really like animals. And I was like, okay, what kind of animals are relatively easy to make that would look cool on a cross-stitched hoop? Birds. Bird faces look really, really cool. So that was the next step that I took. I was like, okay, I can do a puffin. I really like puffins. They're really funny. They're very pretty, and they have like a very cool color combo. And I had all the colors to stitch them with me, all of the threads that I needed. So I was like, okay, I can do this. And then I started creating a process to go through whenever I wanted to do something like that. So when I do something like the bird portraits, I collect anywhere from 5 to 10 reference images so I can get an idea of the shapes, the variation in color, basically do a sketch. And sometimes I do the sketch directly on the program. Sometimes I do a sketch by hand and then scan it and put it as a background on the computer program to create the pattern. But basically have different references so I can get a general idea of what the animal looks like on average. And then create the pattern itself to make sure. And then there's a whole like, make sure that it fits for a certain size of hoop. Make sure that it's not too big or too small. And especially with the bird portraits that I started with, I wanted them to be beginner friendly. I wanted them to be the kind of pattern someone that has just picked up the hobby would be able to do. So I worked with not too many colors, using not too many confetti, like not too many like little stitches here and there and there and there. Work more with color blocks, things like that.
Yeah, no, that's a nice thing about your work is it is very approachable.
I have a couple of things that are a little bit more complicated that I enjoy doing every once in a while, but I really, really enjoy designing the beginner-friendly pieces with the animals. Because I feel like, and on the other hand, it's like showing people what cool birds and other animals they might not know about that are out there. And I always include the scientific name below. So if people want to stitch that, they can. So a little bit of science infused in there.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, just in describing your whole method, you can see the science background playing a role all the way through. No question about it. Did is there any art in your background, or are you just it just comes to you?
Nothing very. I've never taken any art courses or anything like that. I've always enjoyed photography and did it as a hobby as a teenager and as a young adult. And a lot of the work that I've done, both in my master's and my PhD, involved photography, as a form of data collection. So I've always had like a really big appreciation for framing and color balance and all of that. But I've never done it in terms of like taking classes or anything like that.
Well, no, but the don't sell that photography short. I mean, that's where that whole composition, it doesn't to me it doesn't matter if you learn it painting or drawing or photographing. It's still the same principles, and lighting is still important, and no question about it. That's
Yeah, definitely. I think like having a background in like in an interest in photography really helps me look at something and being able to like sketch the basics of it and then playing around with like color warmth and like light and all of that to create a good cross stitch piece.
Yeah. Does the color comes to you naturally? I struggle with it, so I ask.
It depends on the piece. I do have I have a lot of threads. I don't have the complete DMC collection, but I do have a good number that I can just pull out and look at and be inspired by. So that really helps. And recently, maybe last year, I got the complete color catalog with the thread samples. So it really helps having the thread in my hand so I can physically combine it with the cloth and put it side by side and making sure that the colors are working with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only chart to have, the one with the actual threads. Yep.
Yeah.
It's just a waste of ink. Yep.
Yeah, I had the other one, but it doesn't really help me that much. The real thread one, it is super helpful, especially when I'm looking at threads that I have and I'm like, no, this is just not light enough for what I want. And I can go to the thread catalog and be like, okay, so this is mine. This one is one step below in terms of being bright, and this one is another step below. That is the one that I want.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because with the actual thread chart, you can see how light comes off of it. Where if it's
exactly.
Printed, if it's printed, it's just, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've got butterflies, constellations, some chromosomes, chemical formulas. I mean, just any number of things. And it looks, in a lot of instances, things are kind of in a series. It's like, I got an idea and I'm going to milk this till I run out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to run with it until the inspiration isn't there anymore. I think that is a lot of my process, is like, oh, I'll do birds. And then I do like 10 designs and I'm like, okay, I need a break. So what else can I do? Okay. I have a couple of vintage illustrations that I want to work through. Okay, so I'll do a couple of those. And those are really, really hard to do. They take a very long time to get right. So then I take a break and do something else. So I do tend to work in like blocks. And then as soon as the inspiration starts whittling away, I'm like, okay, what is the next thing that I want to work with? And I have a list on my phone of things that I will eventually get to with teams that I'd like to tackle.
That was another question I had. Is there a notebook or something somewhere that the ideas get written down on? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a page in my bullet journal with some sketches and some general ideas, and I keep a running list, a running tally on my phone of ideas that I have for whenever the inspiration strikes for different things, whether it's like a simple project, a medium project, or something a lot more complicated.
Yeah. Talk about your butterfly collection, the LGBTQ rainbow symbols. I don't have the term right, but because I mean, if you don't even put in the LGBTQ part, they're just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, that's one of my pride collections. So all of the backgrounds in the butterflies are based off the colors of different pride flags. So June is Pride Month. And the first year that I was designing, I really wanted to do something special for Pride Month. So I'm part of the community, but I've only come to realize it when I was in my 30s. So I'm very much like very baby in the community, still learning, but I wanted to do something to celebrate the idea that people like to see themselves represented. Mm-hmm. And there's a big community, queer, LGBTQIA community in needlework. So I wanted to do something that people could see themselves represented. And the collection is not complete by any sense of the word. There's a lot more flags that I could add to it. But when I started designing it, for one, I wanted a simple pattern that a beginner could do. And I asked in a couple of cross-stitching groups that I was involved in, what would people like to see? What representation would they like to see? And those were the most popular ones that people wanted to. So I was like, okay, gonna see from the from the different flags that people suggested, the colors, how they work together, how I'm going to adjust them to the pattern. And it took me a while, but yeah, I got the whole collection stitched and I have some of it hanging in my house too.
And that had to be fun. Here are the basic colors in a flag. But now when I go to the DMC chart, which are the actual threads? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Choosing the colors and making sure that they were vibrant enough. Even some of the flags have I took some liberties with the colors and the flags, because some of them have more color. For instance, they have a bigger band of purple than black, then there's a little line here. And I just wanted to play around with that a little bit and make them all very symmetrical with each other. So instead of having all of the sizes represented in the pieces themselves, I wanted to make just the colors. Not necessarily there's more black in this flag or there's more purple, so I'll make a bigger section. I just wanted to make them all very geometrical and very balanced in that sense. So I played around with it a little bit.
And of course, my reading on this is they're just easy to stitch while you're in online meetings. So, yeah.
They are also very easy to stitch when you are in an online meeting. Although I've seen that movie already. I think I stitched most of the butterfly ones actually before I started working full time, while I was still working part time.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they would have been very easy to stitch while in an online meeting for sure.
Yep. Now, do you see that whole theme, the various flags, taking that to other designs, or at some point do we quickly run out of enough of this?
There are different designs that I would like to try out, but I'm not sure what would fit well, because it has to be a design that doesn't have a lot of little nicks, I would say, that is more homogeneous. So the butterfly works really well because it's it has the bigger wings on top, the smaller wings on the bottom, but it still has a lot of space. Mm-hmm. So none of the colors are going to be one or two stitches.
Yeah.
So I would see myself doing a couple of other patterns, but they do have to be designed in the way that you can see the whole flag. And I don't know if there's a lot of silhouettes that are science-based or animal-based where that would work well.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that puts some inherent limits into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't found anything at this point that I wanted to play around with the silhouettes for the Pride series again, exactly because of that. I haven't found the right silhouette yet.
Yeah. So the design work, does that start to have a block of time in your day or your week, or is it just in the evenings when you have a little time, you'll sit down and do something? Or I mean, is it starting to take on a formal portion of your day?
No, it's very informal, and it really ebbs and flows. Sometimes there's a week or a month where 2 or 3 hours every evening I'm designing or I'm stitching whatever I'm designing. And every once in a while, there's just a month or two where I won't touch it. I'll just stitch, but I won't design. So it definitely ebbs and flows according to how inspired I'm feeling. And I was doing a lot more of it up until last year. With marathon training, it was just a lot of my time spent outdoors running. So I've picked it up again this year, but not in a formal way. And you can see that through my Instagram. There's bouts of time where it's I'm posting 2 photos every week of progress or ideas that I have. And then there's blocks of time where I'll post a picture here and there. It really ebbs and flows.
Yeah. I could see that as I went through your Instagram. Yeah. Running, needlework. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's okay because it keeps it fresh and you don't get burnt out on it. So you, I can see how that works. But then now everything you have is you sell through your Etsy shop.
I do. Yeah. I've had my Etsy pretty much from the beginning. But it really much is like a passion project. It's not, it's a little side gig. I don't put a lot of effort into it. Now it's just very much like all my patterns that I have are there. Whenever I create something new, I post it, and then I post the test pieces with all of the images of what I've done and what it can look like. But I don't spend a lot of time working on my Etsy.
And then the Etsy charts are all PDFs?
Yes, they are. They are all PDFs, and I'm careful enough to offer it in multiple versions. So there's a version that's very computer-friendly with all the colors and the symbols, so it's easy for someone working on a computer or a tablet to mark off. And then I have black and white versions for people that prefer to print off their PDFs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most designers, the one part of doing charts is instructions, but I bet you don't like that either.
No. Yeah. My patterns don't have a lot of instructions. I am very careful with the symbols that I use for different colors to make sure that they're not similar or confusing. If there's like a symbol that's a triangle, I won't use an upside down triangle in the same chart, for instance. So it's not easily, like, someone that's looking at it won't easily be confused if they printed it off.
That makes you a hero to a lot of people. Yeah.
I try.
We've all worked those charts with those symbols. Like, who chose these? Really? Come on.
It's like, why are those two symbols that are so alike for similar colors that show up next to each other?
Yep.
Someone didn't think this through. It's like, I've stitched enough of those that I try really hard not to do that.
Yep. I have a couple of those partially finished for that very reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Could you try a plus next to a block instead of a block and a rectangle? You know, not too much
exactly.
trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you try to keep the number of colors under control, or do you just let it happen as it needs to?
It depends on the piece. With the easier pieces like the bird portraits, I try to keep it at a very low number. The more complicated pieces, I do try to reduce the number as much as possible, but without losing resolution. So, for instance, with the vintage illustrations, with the octopus piece, that's 30
Ooh, I love
different
colors. By the way. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite creations. That has 30 different colors, and most of them are shades of orange. but I had, like, working with that, designing that was a completely different way of doing things, because that's based on an illustration from the 19th century, late 1800s, that I cleaned up the image and I adjusted like the coloring and the lighting, and then I imported it through the cross-stitch program. And then I spent 8 to 10 hours cleaning up the image to make sure that the number of threads was not too high, but it was high enough that you could get the detailing and the idea of 3D across it. And also cleaning up stray stitches, confetti, that popped up through the conversion process. That just took me such a long time to do, but I think I found a good balance between having enough threads, but not too many. And the last piece that I designed, that I don't have on my Instagram yet, and I don't have on my Etsy yet, because I am test stitching it right now, is very similar. It's a lantern squid. So it's a squid that has like lighter markings of color across all of its body. So it looks like brighter spots. And it has 40 something colors.
Oh boy.
So yeah, I tried to reduce it to like closer to 30 and it just lost resolution and the spots didn't show up as they were supposed to. So I'm like, okay, this is a lot of variations of like beiges and light yellows. So I'm test stitching it now to make sure that I didn't go a little too overboard with the number of threads. But I'm also stitching it in dark blue fabric, so I am having a hard time. So I'll get it done in the next. I mean, I like working on like different colored Aida, but it's not spring enough here. It's not enough light to be able to work on it in the evening. So I do a little like half an hour here and there, and then my eyes just get tired. I'm just spring forward is this week, so it's coming up. So after that, once I have more light, I'll be able to stitch a little bit more in the evenings with the dark Aida. But it's looking okay so far. It's a lot of like colors.
Yeah, and those animals, there's so many surfaces and angles. No matter how simple you make the image, the original image, there's just so much to those that if you're going to keep any meaningful visual look to them, it's got to be awful hard.
Yeah, it's playing around with like the shading and the angles, and some of them look 3D. So I try to keep that as much as possible when I am transforming that into a pattern. It just takes time and a lot of versions. Honestly, I have a lot of versions of the same pattern saved up, and then I compare them side by side. And like, no, this last adjustment that I did really flattened things out, or this adjustment that I did didn't respect where the shadows were following. So back to the other version and see what I can adjust there.
Well, the octopus worked. I'll tell you, that one stopped my eyes right there. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had several people like stitch it and like share the images through Instagram and tag me. And it's like, I love seeing that when someone stitches something that I've done and it's like, people like it too. And they've done it so well. It makes me so happy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's gotta be the best thing for a designer is to see other people do your work, stitch your work. Yep.
Yeah, it's so fulfilling. And then like getting notes every once in a while from someone being like, thank you so much. Like, I didn't even know that I was looking for this, but I really enjoyed it. And now I have it on display in my house, or I've gifted this to a friend and they really liked it. It's just heartwarming.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat. Yep. Yep. So selling on Etsy, talk about that. That's Etsy's been through several changes lately. Is that still working for you, or?
I mean, at this point, it's still the easiest way to get my designs in front of people without having to do hours and hours and hours of promotion work myself.
Yeah.
They still have like a big base of people. They still are like, if you talk to any cross stitcher, many of them are going to tell you, like, I find my patterns on Etsy. Mm-hmm. So at this point, like, even if the changes are not that good, it's still the place where it's easiest for people to find my patterns. Yeah. I wish there was a better alternative, but at this point, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, they still offer a way to market product mm-hmm. without having to maintain your own website, which is a real time suck. So
exactly. Yeah. And it's easy to create the listings. It's easy to get things up. Like, the system works well. I personally don't really like the new app that much, but that's a personal thing. The app works fine. I just like the way things were organized on the older one a little bit better. Found them easier, but fair enough. But yeah, I don't think I would have started selling my patterns if it wasn't for Etsy, because I would have never invested in upkeeping my own website and doing all of the work to spread the word, all of the marketing. That's just not something that is in my toolbox.
Right.
And it's not something that I'm that interested on, honestly. What I like about the process is designing and stitching. And my Etsy honestly brings me enough of a revenue to invest in more threads and in more Aida and in renewing my cross-stitching software. That's pretty much it.
Hey, for a side hustle, you can't ask for much more than that.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That's nothing wrong with that. So the designing ebbs and flows. Sounds like you're kind of in an ebb period now, and then something will trigger you, and off you'll go again.
Yeah, exactly. That's usually what happens. Like, I see something, or I read something, and I get an idea, and there's a flurry of work and designing. And then things relax for a little bit, and then something else happens, and the cycle keeps up again.
Now, at home, is do you have your kind of your corner with your chair that's a rat's nest of threads and projects, or is that all shoved in a room somewhere?
No, I actually have project bags for everything. So as soon as I finish stitching for the day, I wrap everything up, put it in a bag, and put it away. Things are surprisingly well organized.
Well,
so my little corner of the couch is very clean at this point. And I mean, I have pets, so I worry about like eating threads and things like that. So everything is put away at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, pets will do that. Okay, yeah, that'll drive you to put stuff away for sure, or come home to a nightmare. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Joanna, fascinating stuff. Really, really enjoy your work, and quite a story getting there. And I love the way you incorporate, you know, science and art coming together. Yep.
I think people don't look at science enough through the lens of art. And art is so, so important when it comes to science. It is one of the biggest ways people can showcase how cool science is by like visual medium. I mean, photography, cross-stitching, like painting. It's just, yeah, there's so much beauty in science that it just needs to be showcased.
Yep. Well, you're doing your part. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks so much. Fascinating.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening.